once upon a time, like 50 years back, there used to be an American rock group called CCR, or Creedence Clearwater Revival, Creedence spelled with a double E. They produced a famous single in 1969 called Bad Moon Rising. I am giving you a link with the description for a little bit of fun or nostalgia, whatever you want. Now, that had interesting lyrics, and those are coming back to my mind ever since I have seen this new manifesto, the 7-point manifesto that's been put forward by 26 eminent economists, activists, etc., 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 and opinion leaders. I'm sure you're familiar with this. That is the one where the 7th clause talked about essentially appropriating everybody's assets, property, cash. I will come to that in detail. So as I saw that, and I recalled that 2 weeks earlier, I had recorded one more Cut the Clutter on Sunday in same outdoor location, which talked about that document or report that Indian Revenue Service officers had produced to raise revenues to fight the challenge of coronavirus. Fortunately, that was stopped by the government by the next morning, or it would have further spooked the markets. And unfortunately, some action was taken against those officers, which should not have been done. But how come bad ideas like this are floating at such short intervals? We talk about the doubling rate of coronavirus. Sometimes it's pushed back a little bit, sometimes it gets shorter, so we worry. But the doubling rate of bad ideas, especially on the economy, is not increasing. It is actually shortening. So we now have this 7-point agenda from eminent, well-meaning people, no argument with that, but you can have an argument with their ideas, which I do for sure. And I think they are destructive, and I'll tell you why. And I will also tell you why these have reminded me of this CCR 1969 hit single, Bad Moon Rising. If you just hear some words, its opening lines, you will know where I'm coming from. So it says, I see a bad moon rising, I see trouble on the way, I see earthquakes and lightning, I see bad time today, don't go out tonight, it's bound to take your life, I see a bad moon on the rise. And then it goes on to say, I see the hurricane blowing, I see the world ending soon. It's an exaggeration. Now, if you look at this 7-point agenda, frankly, it is just a better written and better concealed civil services in our times, pressy writing used to be a big thing. It's just a 7-point pressy of what that force document was, because the intentions of it are the same, the motivations of it are the same. So what are the intentions? Intentions are good. That is to help the government fight off this challenge and help the poor. So that is the intention. Both are good intentions. Motivation and reasoning is the same. Why? Because both seem to think that the wealth in the country, or spare wealth in the country, lies in the hands of private citizens, private individuals, and private industry, private entrepreneurs, private traders. So take it from them. Take it from them, give it to the poor. Because these people got rich, they know how to get rich, they might get rich again in the future. Even if they don't, they are much fewer. So this helps the larger common good. Now, this is the same old story of slaughtering the goose that lays the golden eggs. Having said that, let me just go over these clauses. Now, one clause, which was clause 7, in fact 7.1, that caused the biggest problem. That was a clause that was originally explained in the press release with this document with the expression, raise resources, whatever it takes. I'm not making it up. This is in the press release, whatever it takes. Can you imagine? Whatever it takes. First of all, you complain that this government is so authoritarian. Mr. Modi has too much power. Now, Epidemic Act, National Disaster Management Act have again given him too much power. Government is non-transparent. Government is not even letting RTI function. This government has stopped all flow of information. After bitching about this government all the time, you then say, give this government the power to collect resources, whatever it takes. Think about it. I mean, think before you say these things, because once again, it's the same old story. Don't paint the devil on the wall. It will come back and visit you. I've said this earlier. I said this with that force report. I'm saying it again now. Whatever it takes, and even India's leading liberals are telling the government, raise resources, whatever it takes. See you later. Right now, you can't even run away from this country and go someplace else and take residency there, because whatever, however bad things might be in India right now, at least in the virus situation, it looks better or less worse than the rest of the world. So it says whatever it takes, and it says whatever it takes to raise resources, all the resources with people of India, that is cash, real estate, property, bonds, these all become national resources, which means you've nationalized all private wealth in India. It doesn't go on to say private means only people who are private, but does it also mean government officers? Does it also mean judges? Does it also mean the prime minister, who must have some savings, some bonds, some fixed deposits, some cash in his pocket, some cash in his kitchen to buy provisions? Everybody has some cash. Are you going to usurp all this? And if you're going to usurp all this, who's going to do it for you? If you're going to say that, oh, government usurp everything, then why would government officers do it if they have to then grab it from themselves also? History of 20th century tells you that such things are done. These bad ideas are not original. These have been implemented in the past. You can go back to Cultural Revolution, you can go further back. These have been done in many of those extreme communist countries. And how is it done? It's done by party cadres and gundas and vigilantes. This is not done by government. So to say that you can confiscate is not the word they've used. They've just said all these are national assets. It is a very dangerous idea. But once again, to be fair to these signatories, I do not believe that most of them saw this as a dangerous idea. It's only when historian Ramchandra Guha responded saying that this is not the draft I had seen, only 7.1, that then they backtracked and they changed that. And they changed that now to say something else, which again with which I might have some arguments. But the fact is that they changed it after Ram Guha pushed back. But even when they changed it, there was no regret that this was an error. It said that the line we put in has been misconstrued and misinterpreted to mean that we are nationalizing private wealth. You can read that line on the screen. You tell me, how will you interpret that? You can use any English dictionary. You tell me, how will you interpret it? So, in essence, the intention remains the same, and see what line has replaced it now. So a new draft has now come, which many people have now responded to with some comfort, saying, oh, thank you, the communist revolution is now over, this dangerous clause has been taken out. But let me read the new clause to you. It says the government must explore, hear the next word, the government must explore emergency ways of raising resources going beyond the usual set of taxes and levies. So how does the government raise resources going beyond the usual taxes and levies? This country already has 43.5% tax on people who are called super rich. They are just a few thousand people. Together they contribute by raising the tax rate to this only 5,000-6,000 crore rupees, nothing. And this year that will also be lesser than last year, because people's incomes have fallen and stock markets have fallen. So it's nonsensical. This country has seen tax rates go to 97.5% under Indira Gandhi, plus 5% wealth tax. And that is when the foundation of India's deep poverty and India's deep deindustrialization and India's deep black market economy were laid. You can go back there if you want to. Governments love bad ideas. So you're giving them bad ideas, but you're using the expression emergency. Can you imagine if somebody, the Modi government, had used that expression even to say we have a pandemic emergency. We need emergency powers. Oh, wow. That emergency would immediately be spelled with a capital E. So once again, be careful what you get committed to. This is a problem. There are other things there, some of which there are different implications. The first is very good idea. It says bring back all the migrants and say, look, you will get your jobs. Come back and bring back without cost. Excellent idea. Should be done forthwith. In fact, I am concerned right now that all these thousands of Shramik Express trains are being run to take them back to their villages, because by the time they reach there, economy will be opening up because now lockdown is lifted and they'll be needed to come back to work. So I presume the same trains will then go and bring them back. They should bring them back at no cost to them. Good idea. Number two, frontline workers, doctors, they should be looked after, they should be given insurance, incentives, all equipment shortages should be addressed. Very good idea. Nobody can argue with it. Fantastic idea. I'll put my thumb mark on it. Number three, universal access to PDS, that until this emergency is over, every citizen should get 10 kilos of grain. Most of that is now being given. Then it says pulses. Some is being given, but not that much, because government doesn't have that much pulses. That's the reason government has now said some chana. Then it says sugar and edible oil also. Once again, good idea. But now to buy, for government to acquire that much sugar and edible oil and put this in the PDS system takes time. So once again, I would say if you have to do that, more cash direct benefit transfer is a better idea, and leave the trading system to take care of distribution. Put more money in people's hands. That's a neat idea, and you can raise resources for that, and I will briefly talk about how you can raise resources. Number now you come to the next ones. Then you can say save people's jobs or compensate those who've lost their jobs. Again, an interesting idea. It says that all those who've lost their jobs but were on EPF rolls earlier, which means that confirms that they had regular jobs, they should be compensated equivalent of their salaries. I think that is a bit much. I don't see any Indian government being able to afford that, because it's a lot of, even if you confiscate people's properties, and even if you confiscate from me this camera on which this Cut the Clutter is being recorded, even if you go to that depth, you're not going to be able to pay people's salaries for months together, all of them. But you can do other things. So the next idea that they have is an interesting idea, and I'd support it. Within this a subclause which says that MSMEs, for 6 months, government should pay the company's share of EPF to their employees if they agree to, but I'm adding this, if they agree to keep all their employees of their roles, which means if they commit not to lay off employees in these 6 months, 3 months to begin with, then government should pay provident fund for them up to a certain limit. This current limit of 15,000 means nothing. Most MSMEs will not benefit from this, and this will not have a large enough impact. Then you come to troublesome clauses. Number six, no interest on all personal loans for even people who bought their first houses, small and medium industry, for 3 months. Now, once again, if you say no interest for 3 months, given the scale of these loans and the size of our country, once again, it's something you're not going to be able to do. You might say you can defer interest payments, you might negotiate with banks and do something like that, but your banking system is already collapsing. You do something like this, then banking system, see you later. You can forget that your country had a banking system. I mean, you can remember that your country had a banking system, but you can forget that it's going to have one in times to come, because this is also prone to much misuse. Yet, well-intentioned. The last one, once again, which is the sting in the tail. Initially, it said just declare everybody's private property. I presume also provident fund accumulation of President of India. Declare everybody's private assets, cash, property, real estate, bonds, etc., etc., to be national asset. Now it says the government must explore emergency ways of raising resources going beyond the usual set of taxes and levies. So if you ask me, to the extent that I know my English language or I know politics or I know political economy, this means the same thing as before. And the fact is that there might be a change of language with the pushback, but the intention remains the same. The best thing is this is not going to happen, because sometimes I say never underestimate the power of a bad idea. So this is a bad idea, and I won't be surprised if the odd thing is borrowed by somebody essentially on the BJP's right, that is the RSS and the rest, because in their larger economic thinking they are no different from communist thinking that you see reflected in this charter. But I'm hoping that because it's come from this lot who are critics of the Modi government, hopefully that will be one additional reason why government will not implement most of these ideas. But some of these, a couple of these, are good ideas. There's also one idea that I don't fully understand. It says that urban workers should be given the equivalent of MNREGA in urban areas at 400 rupees a day in green jobs. So I don't quite understand green jobs. In fact, I sent Yogendra Yadav a message to ask for it, but I haven't got a reply yet. When he gives it to me, I will give you an update later. So that is where we stand right now. This group has 10 economists for sure, eminent economists, and then activists and others. The 10 economists, if I may say so, respectfully, are essentially mostly economists of the left. So we know where they are coming from. So once you have all of that in mind, then you know what this is about. But once again, a scary thought that educated, well-connected, well-intentioned people can think of ideas which can be misused. Because if you say use emergency, act like you are in an emergency, or everybody's wealth is a national asset, then this is a manifesto for a communist revolution in India. If people of India want it, they can have it, but they'll either have to vote for it or they will have to rise in revolt and set this country on fire. I hope not such a thing happens, and I don't think it's going to happen. So that is my little presentation on this situation. I told you also that from now on we'll start talking about the coronavirus situation a little bit in the end. So I have these two graphics. First of all, two graphics from Shamika Ravi at Brookings, which are evident. One tells you how the numbers are rising and doubling, and these are active cases, and she sees the numbers of active cases. Earlier they had reached a level when they were doubling at 20 plus days 20 21 days. They are now back to doubling faster. They are back to doubling in 15 days, which is worrisome. But India is also conducting a lot more tests. India is right now conducting 1,18,000 per day. I think in 3 weeks it will go up to about 5 lakhs. That's what I am told. So India is conducting more tests. The second thing is comparison of the states, which is very telltale, and you can see which states are doing well, which are not doing well. So you have troubled states which have trouble. So there is Maharashtra, although it's conducted a lot of tests, almost 3 lakh 50,000 tests with 44,600 positive cases, but a test positivity rate of 12.5%, which is very high given that India's test positivity rate is 6%. It used to be 4, it's now risen to 6. So that's also one more important point. Number two, the second most troublesome is Gujarat. 1,78,000 tests, 13,700 positives, 8% test positivity rate. These are bad. Then you have Tamil Nadu in the middle. Testing is very high, 3 lakhs, almost 4 lakh tests, 15,512 positives, 3.5% test positivity rate. And then you have some interestingly good states. You have Andhra, a lot of tests, 2,93,000 in fact, only 2,561 positive cases, so test positivity rate of 0.7%. Then you have states, you also have Punjab, 63,567, it's a smaller state, 20,451 positives, 2.8% test positivity rate, almost a third of the national rate. Still can become lower, but the trend is lower. You can see on the graphic. Haryana, 94,000 tests for a small state, in fact more than Punjab. 1,131 positives, 1.1% TPR, which is very good for Haryana. So home state done well. And then you have state of a kind that we don't have another in India. We've talked about this in the past. That is a state called Telangana. Telangana doesn't even share its figures very much. So even Shamika's chart is about 10-12 May, but I've seen other data that tells you 10, and her chart shows Tamil Nadu having conducted, Telangana having conducted only 23,400 tests. At this point, it might be about 27,000, but the direction remains the same. And it has 8% test positivity rate because it has a big city, like big international city like Hyderabad. So Telangana not testing more, once again, is a national scandal, and it's quite scary because they're testing very low. They are saying they're testing very carefully, so they are not wasting their tests. What is wasting your tests? If your adjoining state of Andhra Pradesh has got 3 lakh tests, you have only less than 30,000 tests. I think there is a, I see a problem there, but there are other states also which now think that the best way to fight off this pandemic is to not test, hide that data, positivity data, because most people get cured on their own anyway. Most people are asymptomatic, so why scare anybody? And also, unfortunately, now some indications are coming up that some states are also fudging, or if not fudging, they are rewriting their fatalities data. So if somebody had a comorbidity, West Bengal started it, then to say that that comorbidity killed the patient, not coronavirus. So this is no badge of honor, and I think truth doesn't hurt anybody, so this should stop. And finally, these two graphics that I said Shipra Kapoor, my colleague, will be doing every day, and she'll be doing more now from now on. And you can see those. These are the number of days by which recovered cases are trailing one overall number of cases. That is still 17 as it was 2 days back. So that is not good news. As I told you, less is better. But on the other side, number of recovered cases trailing currently active cases. Active is total cases minus deaths minus recovered cases. If you take active cases, then recovered cases are trailing them by 8 days now. It was 9 days, so a marginal improvement. You might see some difference in absolute figures in the two sets of charts that Shamika Ravi has and Shipra Kapoor has. That's because the sources of data are different, and the timing at which these were cut off are different. Shipra's data is from worldometers.info. So please look at this and please keep following us. And once again, thank you very much. Many of you have answered our call, our request to contribute to us, because we are not behind a paywall, but we still want you, we still need money to carry on doing a good job, to keep sending people out to report, for them to travel all over the country. So please do contribute. Please don't be complacent, because we need your help.